last night, but I can't remember what he said.
All right, we'll call the community development meeting to order. First comment, or number two is public comment. I understand a couple of people are here for something else, and we'll put that down, number four, after the next item, if that's okay with you. Okay. Item three is the proposal to sell industrial parkland.
Last month, I'd come before the committee with a preliminary purchase agreement. And at that point, the buyer had not been identified. Since that time, we've negotiated what I would consider to be hopefully the final purchase agreement with Dooley Brothers LLP to purchase three lots in Industrial Park. And then the purchase agreement includes an option on a fourth lot. The aerial photos we have are not up to date, but the properties that they're looking at purchasing would be two lots, one, two, and then three, and then they would want an option on the fourth. So there will, for right now, there will be an undeveloped lot at the corner of Trott Avenue and 30th Street Northwest, or County Road 5. Dooley's would plan to develop the other three parcels. The purchase price in the purchase agreement is at the listed price of $1.25 per square foot. We do anticipate that the industrial land write down policy will be used to arrive at a final price at closing. That will need to be documented through a business subsidy agreement that will be drafted by our city attorney that details what the responsibilities are of the company if they do choose to use the industrial land write down policy. And what that will mean is that they will have some real estate investment goals and employment goals that the cost reduction or the price reduction will be based on. If they do not meet those goals, then the company will have to repay any of the cost reductions that are granted at closing. As I mentioned, the purchase price is at the full listing price of $1.25 per square foot for a total cost of $442,747. It's the recommendation of staff that the committee recommend for approval a purchase agreement with Dooley Brothers at the sale price of $442,747, acknowledging the final price to be possibly reduced if the industrial land write down policy is used. And that does remain the option of the company. However, without, in anticipation of using the policy, the price they've agreed to is the $442,747. So that is the purchase price we are dealing with.
And then they're paying the realtor fees.
That is correct. 100% of the real estate, the realtor fees are paid by the buyer.
Okay. And the buy down would be $25,000. Per $1 million of investment for capital improvement or buildings?
It's per $1 million of estimated market value as determined by our assessor's office.
Market value.
Yep.
Okay. And then $10,000?
$10,000 per new full-time job to the county. Yep.
Okay.
So typically when you're dealing with the jobs, they have to provide us with a base list of the types of positions they have filled, and then we'll use that as a basis to judge the job creation against when we file the annual reports with the state of Minnesota.
So roughly right now, our duly representative is here. You want to come to the table?
Absolutely.
Okay. So you have an office in Wilmer now.
Correct.
And you have how many employees there?
Roughly 3 to 4.
So
full-time.
Does that mean they shift between here and Clare City and Murdoch?
They're primarily here. There's two full-timers and a part-time secretary, and then there's a receptionist that floats currently in Wilmer.
Okay. And then over in Murdoch, how many do you have?
Full-time, I would high 20s. And then there's some additional staff that's being added to compensate for some current growth that's taking place right now. And then the biggest changes you'll see is the accounting staff from Murdoch will be the ones that transfer to Wilmer. The sales staff that's out there and the receptionist and the bulk operation that's there will remain in Wilmer and Murdoch just as it currently is.
Okay. So salespeople, that wouldn't count for new job creation, would it? And truck drivers?
If they have jobs that are based in Wilmer, based at a Wilmer location, under the terms of our policy, I believe they would be counted.
Okay, so if they'd have to come here in the morning, pick up their truck, do their deliveries or sales, and then come back?
Yep, they've got to be based jobs.
Okay. And those bulk drivers are currently spread out at the four locations. For the most part, that'll remain the same.
Okay. And then you have, bulk fuel.
Correct.
Natural gas.
Correct.
But that's in the surrounding.
Correct. The natural gas staff that would be at this new office would basically be the natural gas supervisor and two office staff that work directly with him. Okay. That currently are spread out, and that's part of our burning desire to get them all under one roof just to take advantage of some efficiencies.
Okay. Yeah, one locked out here.
Sorry for the melee.
We're just talking about the Dooley transaction. Tim or Audrey, you have any questions?
What we're approving or being asked to approve is the purchase agreement. Business subsidy, it would come in a later time for our review.
Absolutely. That will be a completely separate document. And what this does is it triggers the process to prepare the ordinance for the sale of the property. We still have to have the public hearing to actually sell property.
Okay.
This just states that the city and the buyer are both accepting of the terms of the purchase, understanding that there is still a process to follow.
I'll make the motion to approve purchase agreement with Dooley Brothers LLP at the sale price of $442,747. Final price to be reduced in accordance with the industrial land write down policy. It's recommended by staff.
For a second.
Second.
Further discussion?
I have a question, Bruce, on
okay.
This proposed purchase agreement calls for a quitclaim deed, and then it provides that, it looks to me like it provides that if there's any issue, any problem with property or title pursuant to the buyer's, apparently going to get a title insurance commitment, and then we'd be required, it says the city, to give an affidavit to deal with any problems.
That's the way Robert wanted to structure it, as opposed to using a warranty deed. Because originally the company had come back and said, we want a warranty deed, and Robert said, no, the city will provide you with a quitclaim deed.
So that's probably
a better question to put to Robert than to me. He can probably address that better, Tim.
I kind of thought he was going to be here, but because of the sex offender thing and that, but, that was the impression I got.
Kay.
I don't recall that he told me that exactly, Kay. But the way he told me, I thought,
Well, the brief conversation we had about that issue is there was some, he exhibited some confusion over exactly what the expectations were for him, and I hadn't been part of any of the conversation, so I really can't say, but he's obviously not here. So.
It was the desire of the buyer, as in most cases, to have a title commitment provided by the seller as well as a warranty deed transferring title instead. And the city responded with they were not interested in any of the expenses that would be associated with a title commitment, bringing that to bear for a title insurance policy. So the buyer agreed to take care of all the expenses regarding that and accept a quitclaim deed as opposed to a warranty deed.
I understand.
Or
that.
A limited warranty.
Yeah, but there are provisions in here that, if the way I read this, if the title insurance company has any objections to the title. In other words, if there were to be some encroachments possibly, that we would give an affidavit of indemnification for that. You know, so it's kind of like, you know, we didn't give a warranty deed, but we're going to turn around and take care of any defects, you know, that cause them any problem. That's the way I read it. And I thought, I just think it's an odd way. I will ask Robert. It just looks real odd to me.
It would feel like it could stop the closing if the things didn't come together right with the title. So.
Oh, I think if there was a title problem, then the buyer might just well say, I don't want anything to do with it. But I mean, we've had some other deals like this. Well, the Genio deal, you know, we gave them a quick claim deed, but they required all kinds of other affirmations by the city that we would protect the title in the purchase and sale agreement. I thought it was a little strange.
We ended up definitely working with them to cure some of the perceived defects. They couldn't identify that they were defects, but they were concerned they were, so we, I guess, gave them a comfort level that the defects did not exist. The way this is written is different from a typical purchase agreement that I've seen for residential real estate, and that it does keep the city involved in the process to cure defects.
Mm. In the state, do they have any say in this?
State?
Nope.
None.
For sure?
Positive. Okay. This land has been released.
Okay. Audrey, you had another question?
No, I was just curious if Mr. Fenster knew why the city was doing it that way.
Do you know the specific clause that's in, that addresses? I'm just kind of searching for it right now.
Mm-hmm. It's in the seller's closing documents. Closing documents, it refers to a quick claim deed.
Do you have the page on that?
Yeah, let me find it here. In paragraph number 5, B, it talks about the seller's affidavits and or indemnity, which may be reasonably required by the title company to issue an owner's policy. In other words, if they see defects, they don't want to issue the policy. That's what that's about. You know, I used to write title insurance a long time ago. So.
And they'll be, Dooley's will be responsible for the hookups to the sewer and water. Then.
Yeah, the services are all brought in through the right of way, so it's, that would be very typical.
Any other questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes. So that'll be Tuesday night. Vote on it.
And then the following meeting, I will have the ordinance prepared for the sale of the real estate, and we should be through that ordinance in February and should be ready to close by the end of February.
Okay. You can start building in May then, hopefully. Or April.
April. Okay. April. We're going to meet the deadline.
It's going to be warm.
When will we see the write-down particulars and the commitments of Dooley to what they're going to do for additional jobs and real estate improvements, et cetera?
That will require a meeting between myself and Dooley's to find out exactly what they are confident that they can bring to the table so that we have a structure to write down and create the business subsidy agreement. As soon as we've got that, then I'll work with Robert and have that prepared, and I would hope to do that on a parallel course with the ordinance.
Well, and that'll be subject to later approval by the council. Then.
Absolutely, that'll come back to this committee. Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Em.
Thank
you.
Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Have a good evening.
Bruce, you want the signed purchase agreement? Should I date that today, or should that be dated to the previous date?
Bring it Tuesday.
Okay.
We should have that dated Tuesday because it'll take the full council to do the formal approval of the purchase agreement. So we should have it dated the 19th if it's approved on Tuesday. Okay.
And we'll jump to the next one instead of the instruction summary. You want those people off the table? Or?
I don't think they can probably hear. They want to come up.
Sealander's first name?
What was his first name?
Was it Kim?
He was here last time.
Sealander. Yeah, I didn't have it last time either. I didn't get it.
Shelby knows. Oh, okay.
David would know.
No.
I thought it was in there.
I'll talk to Doug. I'll hear from Doug.
All right. The next item was sexual, how do you state that?
Sex offender residences?
Okay, since you brought it up. We did get a letter from the city attorney, and I see there's some interested people here. So you want to make a comment?
Well, as I read Robert's analysis, I think when it's, what, six or less residents, that we can't really do anything.
That's true for every licensed residential facility.
Yeah. Can you hear? Why don't you come up to the table? We've been told by the city attorney that when you have a residential facility of six or fewer people, under state law, regardless of what their purpose is for housing, in other words, whether it's sex offenders or some other halfway house facility, you can't put any restrictions on where they locate, believe it or not. I mean, I find that to be a little...
So if it was for folks with developmental disabilities or any other kind of... home for people of certain set of characteristics.
Yeah, that's basically how I read it.
Okay. Yep. Yeah. If it is a state-licensed facility containing six or fewer residents, it's considered a single-family home for zoning purposes, and that's mandatory statewide. There's no local discretion that can be applied at all.
But if you have a larger facility, seven or more people, then the city has some ability to, you know, put some restrictions in place.
I guess, if I may, Tim, I guess my main concern on this thing is this is a microcosm of what's happening in our state. And we're looking at about 750 criminal sex offenders that may be turned loose from St. Peter. And we do have things, and I don't know exactly how they're worded, but we've got Megan's Law, and we've got the Wetterling Registration. And maybe they can be looked at is that, if nothing else, this can be a statewide registration of all sex offenders that can be plotted on a map, because these people are required to sit there and tell them where they are, regardless whether they're one, two, and three.
Right.
And at least that way, anybody buying any property could sit there and go to the website, push a button, and see where they are. I think there are restrictions under those two laws regarding whether realtors can disclose that. And I really don't have a problem with a level three sex offender, because I think he's heavily monitored, and you know who he is because there's a picture. Level ones and level twos, you don't. And we don't know how fast they're coming in and out of this place. We don't know what their crimes are. And these folks have diminished people's quality of life. And not only then, during their crimes, but they're also diminishing my quality of life. I'm concerned about my grandchildren coming over and my neighborhood. And if there was a statewide map, at least you could go to the website, you could bring up a picture, you could tell your son, your daughter, whoever, to look at these things. And I also have a vested interest, you know, is that I was in law enforcement 30 years. I don't look forward to having five people that are sex offenders who've been arrested by law enforcement living in my backyard, may not like cops. That's diminished my property value. That's diminished my quality of life. I have a next door neighbor to my north that sits at their breakfast table, and they have a direct line of view from their breakfast table into her kitchen. And she sits there in her bathroom. It makes her very uneasy. My next door neighbor would have had some type of indication by going to the website, because I think under the law, the only one that's privileged to sit there and have the law enforcement information is law enforcement, and they only have can disseminate level three. With pushing to the state, they may be able to push one and two. At least that way, you can go to a website, you can look at it, you can push a button, and you can sit there and say, oh, These are the people that are in that neighborhood. Do I want to or do I not want to? But unfortunately, I think this is a microcosm of things to come because you're dealing with a large variety of sex offenders that are going to be released. They're going to go someplace. They're going to somebody's backyard. And we have underwater properties. We have people that have cousins that can't make code. And this is an open door for all kids to come in and sit there and say the Department of Corrections is going to write the check for it. And the problem is that this is a good moneymaker. And when you're looking at places like closing down the state hospital, not knowing what to do to the Minnesota facility out there by the YMCA, you're going, which is more important to our community? To sit there and have the technology, or to have a place that we have places to people that can go and they can get back into society. But getting rid of these facilities is not necessarily going to make it easier for the average homeowner. And of course, then I'm stuck with the problem with my property taxes. And the assessor's office says that, well, the appraisers can't tell me what's happened to my property because nobody sold around my neighborhood. And the assessor says, well, you can get information from other states, but we'll just bring in other information anyway. So what is the value? Is my value of my backyard butting up to a house for level 3 and possibly 4 more, because I believe that is now a 5-bedroom place of concentrated sex offenders, doesn't make my property very valuable to an awful lot of people. And that's my main concern. But I guess my recommendation, if the city can't do anything, but I think they should be doing it because they can do it in my backyard, they can do it in anybody's backyard. These sex offenders that they're dealing with, that they've got about a year to figure out what they're going to do with, are going to be released. Other cities have dealt with it. And maybe by looking at Megan's Law or the Wetterling Registration, that something can be done at least on the state level. Because unfortunately, the Department of Corrections, the Kandiyohi County Corrections, are all looking for places to house these people. And they've got the checkbook.
I understand everything you're saying, Ron, and I would be just as upset as you and anybody else, as Mitra and her husband. I would not be happy. My problem here is I don't even, Representative Baker's not here. Yeah. And he's, the state level is where we're going to have to go to try to get something done.
If we were able to do whatever we wanted to do at the state level, what would it be?
Well,
what would we propose?
The existing law that ties our hands is state law, and that gives the state the right to locate these residences of 6 or less for different types of facilities. Which happens to, it's broad enough; it includes
these
sex
the
offenders.
State, you mean the DOC?
Pardon?
When you say the state, you mean the Department of Corrections?
Yeah. Well, this law applies to more than just DOC facilities of 6 persons or less. But
they're ready to check
on
these things.
Audrey, you have something to say?
I'd like a clarification if what it means to be a licensed residential facility and what we are looking at for a license. Because at least when we're talking about group homes or we're talking about even senior housing, if you're a licensed facility, then you have some sort of staffing. You have some sort of, and so I'm curious, it's referenced in here as a licensed residential facility. I'd like to see some clarification of what the requirements, I don't know. That's what.
See, I don't know what the state definition or what the statutory definition of licensed residential facility would be, but it includes all of those things that you mentioned.
Yes. And
DOC,
so
DHS.
The material we've gotten keeps referencing a licensed residential facility. So I think we need to find out, what does that mean? What's the requirements? And, are they meeting the requirements? Is it staffed?
Yeah.
How does it become a licensed facility?
That's what we were told at the meeting.
We were told at the meeting by Reverend Laidlaw that this is not 24-hour staffed. They do have a video camera at the front door and the back door, but they do not have a 24-hour staff there.
So did he indicate, because I thought in the conversation I had that it was indicated it wasn't licensed, that it was strictly a rental home.
Originally, I don't know. I don't know how this happened. Originally it was sold. I think Walter had it. He sold it to, I think, the guy that's got the housing out on North 71. I think it was then sold to this overcomer groups that Laidlaw, Reverend Laidlaw is with. So, and I think they put some money into this thing because I think this is called Overcomers International. And this is what they do, is they sit there and they recruit or they offer these people that are coming out of these institutions housing. And so what they've done then is put money into this place to bring it up to code, to put in extra bedrooms, and the Department of Corrections paying for it.
And it's not clear whether the place is licensed by anyone, what kind of license it is, and what the conditions of that license.
That's we don't know.
If it's not licensed, then the number of unrelated adults would be regulated by our city zoning ordinance.
Well, but then it changes what's in our city attorney's.
Absolutely.
The information that I read anyway keeps referring to a state licensed facility. So I guess I'd like to understand that. And what does it mean to be a state licensed facility for this type of.
If they're not a licensed facility, then I'm guessing DHS and DOC are not involved in any of the payments or there's no housing subsidy being paid to the owners of these facilities, and that's why they typically license them, is so they can become part of that public dollar stream.
Yeah. But I think we've got some, at least for me and what I read, I don't think it answered my questions.
Well, the state sets the licensing standards also. We can't set those. So.
Right, but this information is referencing that it's licensed.
Right.
Andrew has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering regarding the second part of Robert Scott's conclusion here, where it talks about the city having the power to impose reasonable residency restrictions directly on registered sex offenders. Does that ordinance supersede, I mean, does one supersede another? So you can't put a restriction on a facility, you can't stop the facility, but if the people in the facility, if there's an ordinance drafted saying, cannot be within X amount of feet of this facility or that facility or other places around town, does one supersede the other in terms of which one gets precedence?
If it is not a licensed facility, but it is being occupied by sex offenders, the city does have the authority to have separation distances on those types of, I don't want to call them facilities, I call them housing.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And there our zoning ordinance would control how many could be there. And just like we deal with adult-oriented businesses, we have separation distances in our ordinance that govern the placement and operation of those uses.
Okay, so this may be a bad question, but so establishing distances from schools, parks, daycares, facilities, whatever, that only is with respect to residency and not to just the person being in within that proximity?
Exactly, yep.
Okay.
I'd like to see us get some additional clarification, and since it wasn't on the agenda tonight, I think we need to also check to see if Robert Scott needs to be here to address some of these things when we do have the discussion.
I agree.
Yeah.
I don't know if we can do it, before a city council meeting, so he doesn't have to make a special trip out here. Would that work?
I don't know, or a conference call or something. I mean, if he can be available, but I think we need to get some additional answers and also find a way to have a conversation with him.
Yep. And we need to have Representative Baker and Senator Coonan.
I think we need to figure out what we have control over with and then what we don't.
We don't have a whole lot of control.
And figure out who does.
Our control is very minimal, unfortunately.
What else did Mr. Scott find out? My understanding was that he was investigating what other cities are doing to handle these questions. I mean, in addition to discovering that cities can't do much about licensed facilities with six or fewer residents, what did he find out?
He said that we can regulate the separation distance for residences that house these offenders that are not licensed. If they are licensed, the city's authority is about zero.
Okay. Other than this question about whether it's licensed or not, was there any information that he shared about how other cities are dealing with the question?
There are other cities that have imposed separation distances
Which they can do because it's not licensed facilities?
Exactly.
So that can be individuals residing at individual residence. It doesn't even have to be a facility per se, right? It can just be...
You're right. Now, the issue there is we would only be aware of those if they're level three.
Right.
I feel like we have some more homework to do and to be, so we can do it right. Figure out what we can do and what we can do right.
I don't have any problem with that and getting some, maybe a couple of clarifications from Robert. But the trouble is, I do see this as a very difficult thing for us to do anything about. And that's very frustrating. The avenues that we were looking at having them explore, they'd been blocked by state law. Which didn't surprise me a whole lot, but it does anger me because we have either the state or the federal government imposing these kinds of things on our community that our community doesn't want.
Well, and that would be my hope, is that I do recognize that there are some state and city problems with this thing. And again, like I say, this is just a microcosm of what's going to happen to the state of Minnesota doing to that law. And if we don't push the issue, and maybe Ground Zero should be Wilmer, Minnesota, on what is going to happen with these people when they let them loose.
Yeah.
But the idea of a lot of going into a residential area, we've got like four residences and we've got like four rental properties on that particular block. And I'm sure that anybody, one of them is like student housing with like about five apartments in it. They have three young children there. And if nothing else, to push this registration situation to include ones and twos, that you can go to a statewide map.
Right.
They already have their addresses. Push a button and have a red dot and a yellow dot and a blue dot to sit there and see what levels surround your property. It would take the real estate agents off the hook. It would take the city government off the hook. It would be let the buyer beware on the property if you want to live there, this type of thing. And it may not be a cure-all, but it will at least be an indication of being able to pick where you live and what is going to be surrounding by you. And
the timing for that might be really good, given the fact that the state is arguing with the courts right now on, do we have to do this?
Right. And if they lose that battle, they're going to go someplace.
Right.
And the public needs to be protected some way with knowledge.
Right.
And that's what I'm asking for.
Andrew?
A couple of questions. I'd like to know who's going to find out whether this is a licensed facility or not. Who's going to take that on? And then I'm also curious.
Bruce.
Okay, great. Thank you.
I don't even know the address, so.
I can give it to you.
I've been okay.
It's 312 10th Street Southwest.
So you can go to the database and just look.
312 10th Street Southwest.
It's owned by, the name on the title is Overcomers Fellowship International. That's in the county records. For contact information, you can just Google it.
Yeah, we'll find that.
Second question, I know that California, for example, makes public information about all levels of sex offenders. I'm sure there's more states out there than California. Seems to me it would be useful to find out how many states and what they are. That just would be a useful piece of information to have as we move forward, if it's going to be on our agenda to propose making Minnesota one of those states. So, anybody want to take that on?
Well, we can, I can do some research on that. That's not real hard to do. And
I wouldn't know how to do it, so.
Yeah, but yeah, no problem. And I agree with Ron that, impose some registration restrictions with respect to they have to register then all levels of sex offenders. I don't have a problem with that. Mm-hmm. And then you know where they're at, because they'd be that to me, I think. Well, right now that's public information for the threes, but not for the ones and twos.
I was never really sure what it meant to register as a level one or a level two offender. What does that registration get you?
They keep closer track of them. For example, and if you're on probation, even as a one or a two, your probation agent has a right. You got to keep them informed where you're living.
Yeah.
Where you're working, all that kind of stuff. But once they're off probation, and, you know, no longer under any kind of supervision. They've done their time or whatever, served their sentence, if you will, and they've been discharged. They're free to go.
But they carry that designation as an offender in perpetuity, right?
Yeah, I don't think, yeah, those convictions don't go away unless you were, if you could persuade the governor to pardon you. But I mean, I don't know too many governors.
But I think that there is a set of specific periods of time where they have to register as a sex offender.
Right.
And usually it's like 10 years after you're released, whatever the court determines is your time. And I would imagine that once you are no longer required and you fulfilled that particular obligation,
and take your pin off the map.
You're no longer to do it. It's not a real difficult thing. The information is there. It's just a matter, and I think there are like about a dozen states that have different ways of notifying people. Minnesota is one of the states that basically the only thing that they've chose to do is make it up to law enforcement to notify on level threes. That's where it is in Minnesota so far. So I don't think it's a big stretch to sit there and push the legislature to move in a different direction on that.
Audrey, you had a question?
I think we have a responsibility to figure that out what we can do and what we're willing to do. Then I think we also have a responsibility to share with Representative Baker and Senator Coonan what we can and can't do and express the concern about that information and see, you know, are we alone or is there something else that, you know, where do we go from there?
And you're saying we, are you saying staff or the council?
I think we as a council have to figure out what we can do as a city, but share that information with them. And then maybe there has to be some other sort of group that works on this.
I think, you know, WMRA has a vested interest in this because we have an awful lot of housing that is, we're taking an awful lot of care of a lot of problems for a lot of people in our housing and licensing centers and stuff. And if this thing's mushrooms, this thing could mushroom really bad, really big for a long period of time if something isn't done on the state level on this thing.
I think we got to figure out what we can do first and then pass it on. Or,
you know, like I said, it's going to be more important. And my guess is as long as the legislators had an out in St. Peter and Moose Lake, basically committing these people forever, they were washing their hands of the problem. Sure. So,
yeah, but federal court's dealing with them, and I know Donovan Frank. He's not going to be kind to the state, in my opinion. Okay. I'm surprised that he's given them some of the more recent extensions that he's allowed. You know, extended deadlines that he'd previously set. So that surprised me, but we'll see.
Well, thank you for your concerns.
Well, thank you. I'd like to thank you all for your consideration.
We're limited, but we're going to see what we can do and hopefully get with the representatives and the senators before they go down to session in March.
Well, I fully understand, you know, your concerns, and I think I told you. I mean, if it would have happened to me on my block, I would, I don't care what the assessor says, I'd go to the Board of Review and let them know this is going on in the community. So only you got to raise somehow you have to raise the ante a little bit.
You only do that in April, though.
Yeah. Well, when it's
coming.
Really.
A couple times.
Well, thank you much for your time.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. I'll let you know what I find out. Yeah, you bet.
Next item, instruction summary.
Purely for information. I sent out our December 31 construction summary for the year 2015. Our total construction came out a few million dollars less than we had expected, though it came out with higher values and higher revenues than we had budgeted. So that's the good side. Looking ahead to 2016, we're already aware of around $50 million worth of projects that will be coming through our offices for permitting. And they range from healthcare facilities, taxable by the way, to retail facilities, large retail facilities, industrial facilities, and some public facilities such as the school. So I think we've clearly recovered. If you look at the last few years, we've clearly recovered from the downturn in construction that we had 4 or 5 years ago, and we should continue to build. And if next year, I would be surprised if we weren't in that $70 million range. I could see us easily double our construction values next year, or this year.
16, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What about our residential housing starts, new construction?
Well, we had 12 single-family homes last year and 5 twins, so we only added 22 units of housing. The county has seen a lot more housing starts. There's a lot more people that are interested in building out in the rural areas and finishing building on the lakes. And the lakes are pretty well built out, in my opinion. But we have a lack of quality single-family lots in our community right now that have services available to them. There is some available, but for the people that really want to invest in housing, they want a little topography. They want something other than just a flat site to build on, and right now we don't have that.
I mean, I know the county, has seen a lot of housing starts.
And yes, they have.
They've really dropped off for us, and that concerns me. I don't know how we get that number back up. Mm-hmm. It's a problem.
If you look at housing starts throughout the county, I think we're probably back to where we were pre-recession, but they're definitely skewed in the rural areas as opposed to the city of Wilmer. And you're seeing that, like a city of Pennock or Raymond or Candy, Ohio, you're not seeing new housing in those towns to speak of at all.
There's one in Pennock.
There is one now. Okay. Good.
Being built.
All right.
Audrey?
I think the housing study that was done has some interesting things in there and interesting projections with what we should be having in Wilmer. But
yep.
I think it really is dependent on what's going on outside of Wilmer. And I think that may present a challenge for us from a housing standpoint. So, and I know there's some people still working on some of that information, but if you haven't had a chance to read it, I think it is worth reading about the projections of what we need and keeping our housing up to date also. Single-family homes, up to date.
So what's going in on the OnQ building at north of McDonald's?
Insurance didn't... Hmm? Didn't State Farm guy...
McQuinn.
McQuinn bought it.
He bought it.
Yep, yep.
Is he moving his office there?
It's my understanding, yeah.
And what about the Dino gas station? That sold to her.
I think that's just showing that it was sold from the original sale. When Cenex Harvest State sold it to Marcus, I don't believe they've transferred it since then. I believe they're still trying to acquire the other house on that north end of that block so that they've have the entire east half. Then they'll market that.
So any word on new business by Runnings then?
I've seen a revised site plan that staff has signed off on. I've seen building elevations that we've signed off on. We're waiting for the civil submittals and then the building plans to be submitted, and at that point it will become public. But our zoning ordinance doesn't require any planning commission review for what they've proposed. It's all permitted uses, so it's all done internally, so it doesn't really become public. I know the newspaper has been anxiously awaiting that as well. I get an email every couple of weeks from Ammerman. So.
Bethesda Heritage, anything with that? No?
I've not heard anything. I do know that Calvary Church has pretty much given up on the Bethesda property and is looking at buying 5 houses north of there across on the other side of Olina Avenue to demolish for parking.
Is there a concern about crossing Olina for parking with that, with what they're proposing, or do we have any say in it?
Well, on their plans, they show a mid-block crossing, so I would discourage that. I think they can cross at the east and west end of the block.
Official jaywalking?
Yeah, well.
Like at the library?
Yeah.
Anywhere else?
So if
Well, there's a lot of people at Calvary that aren't very nimble, Tim, so I would encourage them not to.
So if they buy those properties, will that land be taxed, or is it church-owned, so there's no...
It will become tax-exempt at that point.
What if we would close off the street between Bethesda and Calvary and redo the parking lot, the parking up by the building? Is that something to look at?
Well, I know Bethesda has raised that same question in trying to attract a buyer. They would like to have all of 3rd Street Southeast for parking as well. So, you know, you'd have a little battle there between the housing and the church. And I'm really curious to see if anyone in the housing market can come in and figure out a way to profitably retrofit that nursing home. You know, the bones are good, but the cost of gutting it and reconstructing
from
the inside out. It's tough. To me, it doesn't lend itself to family housing at all. The multi-levels like that, you know, there's no green area for families. There's no, any of the green area that's there would probably have to be converted to parking to meet parking standards. And it's
The Elks have an offer or something on their building downtown?
I had not heard that.
I just was told that there's a meeting.
I've heard through the grapevine there is a buyer for the former Habitat property at 7th and Litch.
I heard that one too. I forgot about that one.
So, and we've seen preliminary plans for the old Killeen School of Dance building.
Okay.
Very aggressive plans for that structure. And earlier the owner of that property, the buyer of that property, had requested that the city open up the old rural site for parking. And if you'll recall, the council did agree to do that on a temporary basis, gave no pledge that it would be parking in perpetuity, but said at least for now it could be used for public parking. At some point, we'll have to make some decisions as to what level of maintenance we put into that property and whether or not we're just going to keep it bladed gravel, and or if the city wants to bite the bullet and have another parking lot, paved parking lot at that location. Like I said, the proposal for that building is very aggressive, and she has some high hopes for her ability to generate some activity in that building.
You offered to sell the lot to her?
At that, when I brought it to committee last year, that was not really seen as a really viable option. We certainly can. There's nothing preventing us from selling it.
Well, I wanted to see the gun range there, but that didn't happen, so I just didn't sell it. Get some tax dollars.
Pardon?
Get some tax dollars.
Yeah. Yeah, there's an expectation on that end of town that the city needs to provide more public parking, and yet if you look at where it is in Old Town and cut off by the bypass, that's not where the bulk of the commercial activity is. It's not to say you can't grow commercial activity on that side of the bypass, because you certainly can, but I'm guessing the council is going to be faced with that decision sometime in the near future.
Or make it a parking lot with plug-ins for electric cars and charge people to charge their vehicles.
Huh? Are we
seeing where is that on the map?
Pardon?
Where is it on the map?
It's right over here across from the utilities.
It would be there, don't worry.
It's perfect. Too far. Getting closer. You're getting there. There it is.
This property right here. The city owns this right now. It was gifted to the city. This building is gone, and there was this bigger building back here is also gone. So the city owns that as a empty lot right now. And this is the building that's being proposed for redevelopment. they would like to have that parking. The Eagles Club is in this building right here, and they've indicated that they would like more parking. The people in this structure here would like more parking. This is multifamily housing, and they have limited parking as well. And across the street is the Food Shelf. They've expanded a little bit, and I believe they're still planning on doing some greenhouses on this property here. So,
the building on the corner, can't say it used to be.
Pardon?
The building right on the curb, it's for sale too, right?
Right on the curb.
The Central Wheeling.
This
yeah,
one?
Yeah. That one's for sale, isn't it? Seems to me I saw a for sale sign there.
Okay, I...
But that's just the front part, isn't it?
I can't say for sure. Well, West Central, this is the dollar store. West Central owns this, and I don't know how much of that the glass is in. The uses in these buildings turns over fairly regularly.
It's an upholstery place in there.
Yep. But I think all of this is owned by the same person with the exception of this corner right here.
Okay.
That's where an ice cream store used to get orange sherbet there.
Yeah.
God, you're old.
Remember that, Jim?
I just had to say it. Because I'm older.
At least it wasn't me saying it, so we're good.
And,
sorry, I
bet you
didn't.
Wasn't that also? No. Sputnik Donut Shop. That was over here. Nobody remembers that.
That was over
I don't remember
on
that
Benson
one.
Avenue.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I remember that.
I probably wasn't allowed to go there.
Right after the Soviets put one up in space, we had a Sputnik donut shop here in town. So.
Gosh, I'd like a donut shop in town.
Yeah, I should. We had one.
Anything else?
Mr. Chair and Committee, at the council meeting, Council Member Ahman asked a question about a presentation on the Y. And I haven't had a chance to talk to Bruce about that. What do you see as a good venue for that? Give us some feedback.
I'm curious with what there is to update from what we got before. So
we got something emailed to us, correct, regarding operational costs compared to revenues?
That was on the Aquatic Center. This is on the railroad.
The railroad, yeah.
Okay.
Y project. And so we'd appreciate a little guidance.
Is there anything?
What's it? The questions that I've gotten regarding timelines, like timeline schedule in terms of phases, when things are engineered, when you got all your soft costs, and then when your bid schedules go out and stuff, are they already starting to put those things into a timeline? I'm sure they are.
We had a 6-hour meeting yesterday, and we performed risk analysis on the two options that exist for the routing. And the railroad routing is the same under both scenarios. It becomes County Road and Highway 12 routings that change in the second scenario. We are waiting for that risk analysis to be completed. We will have numerical scores back within the month.
Okay.
But we are working. I know there's a meeting next week. MnDOT and BNSF are going to be meeting to discuss the different options and what the impacts of those are on the environmental review process. That's a huge, huge, I shouldn't call it an obstacle, but it's a huge part of the process. But BNSF has already purchased a number of properties, so there's a lot of loose ends that we are trying to pull together into a schedule, but it really won't be done until we complete the risk analysis and all the parties agree on whether or not we're going to do the original project or do the value engineering project. And there's been some cost changes, cost estimates that have changed for both of those options that will probably influence that final decision.
Audrey, you had a question?
Well, so is there some sort of business plan or who's leading those meetings? I mean, maybe that's what he's looking for.
This project is being
steps?
Led by the Minnesota Department of Transportation and the Federal Railway Administration.
So maybe
the city of Wilmer is a bit player.
It.
We have been asked to provide right-of-way. That's really our only involvement in this process. Other than being part of the discussion group, Sean and I go to these meetings, and constantly make sure that our interests are being protected.
With the slowdown with oil recovery in North Dakota, has anyone said anything?
That's not deterring BNSF from wanting to move ahead with it. We're still moving an awful lot of commodities through here that are coming into town and going different directions, and that's not going to change.
Is there a venue that MnDOT could have to update the community at some point that we could?
We, as part of the process, we did talk yesterday about having at a minimum of one community meeting, and then if there are some specifically affected property owners that are affected by any potential change to the project, MnDOT's going to meet directly with them one-on-one. But we have talked about a community meeting. It has not been scheduled. But, you know, that's the kind of thing we'd probably have at the library or a central location like that.
So they'll have a committee like they did for the Highway 12 business owners that are affected, the state? No?
No, it won't be anything like that. They've just met with the individual property owners one-on-one. Once a decision is made on the routing and the option to take, the involvement by those property owners will be limited to however they participate in the acquisition process.
So did you get your answer?
No.
Were we able to confuse you additionally?
Yes.
Okay.
Listening to Bruce, though, to me, maybe there's just a clarification of our role and who's leading the process. I'm not sure what Councilmember Rahman was looking for, but if he's concerned that we're doing something that we don't know about, but it's, I mean, if we don't have any, not that we don't have any control, but if we don't have any, it's being led by someone else, so we're doing what we're told to do. So that's different than leading.
Are we going to get hooked for any cost sharing on this when it finally...
Under the Memorandum of Understanding, our obligation is to provide the right-of-way that we've already pledged for the north-south tracks. If there would be a realignment of some roads and some additional road right-of-way required for the project, I could see them coming back and requesting that, but I only see that in one small strip as a possibility. So they can ask for all the cash they want. Our obligation on paper is right-of-way at this point. I will put something in the minutes. It just says the project is being led by MnDOT, cities.
You can just put it in the minutes, and I'll just call on you.
You can do that.
That's a good way to do it.
And I think that community meeting might be helpful for people to know, too, that there is one scheduled.
Well, it's not scheduled. It's been discussed.
Discussed.
We're not sure when to do it. A lot of these things have to fall into place, because the last thing we want to do is bring something out and says, we're looking at these options. Mm-hmm. We want to determine the best project before we bring it out to the public. I'll say a community meeting is likely for spring.
Because,
yes. Yeah, it's important we put a year on it, isn't it, Rick? We have to have all the environmental work done and have total project sign-off by the FRA by September of 2017. Okay. And then construction would begin right away in the spring of 18. 2019 would probably be used to settle out dirt embankments, and then a lot of the road work could be done in 2019, and then the final rail work and the bridge work should be completed in 2019 with a mid to late 2020 opening. So it's not going to happen overnight.
No,
it's a big project.
It's heavy. Earthwork.
Yes.
Any other questions? Any motion to adjourn then?
I'll move.
All right. We're adjourned. Thanks.
So I went to the Minnesota Department of Human Services. I asked for light